Kia ora koutou katoa, e mihi aroha kia koutou. It's so nice to be here with you again, and thank you for this chance to talk with you. It's been great, actually, being so many of you I know, and we've been working together for such a long time, so it feels very much like being part of the whānau, so kia ora. I just want to acknowledge the President, Helen Kelly, and Sid Kepa, President of the Māori. What are you called, Sid? Just where are you? Just called Sid. Kia ora, Sid. And Kiwari Komato, who I spent a lot of time with in Dunedin, with Peter and Richard as well, and all of you, so kia ora koutou. Let's start with some very good news. We are heading towards election year with a momentum that will change the government. A real sense of purpose is growing in this country. And what is so exciting is that momentum that we are all building is driving us towards doing good things. Good things for people and good things for our planet. Workers and their unions are among those who are at the very heart of this gathering momentum. As the biggest democratic movement in the country, you connect to hundreds of thousands of working people and are making a difference in their lives and communities every day. Thousands of union members have joined rallies and stood up against National's employment law attacks. The Select Committee hearing submissions on the government's proposed employment law changes has had to hold hearings for many more weeks up and down the country because of the overwhelming number of working people, union people, who have said no to winding back protections for new workers, vulnerable workers and organised workers. Momentum is gathering to confront the disgraceful death and accident toll in our forest industry. And while Simon Bridges continues to keep his head firmly buried in the sand, you have persuaded the Forest Owners Association to commission an independent review into the forest sector and raise public awareness of this disgraceful national tragedy. Progressive movements understand a single truth: the importance of standing up and being counted every single day. And you can't go past Mahatma Gandhi, just to name check, his description of this process. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. NZEI is fighting a battle against national standards, and with the PBTA are standing up against the privatisation of education through charter schools. This is a fight that we will take up in government next year when we abolish charter schools from the Kiwi. And we will also take up the living wage challenge, a movement that is taking the world by storm. The simple right to a wage that allows for a dignified life while working reasonable hours is firmly on the agenda of community organisations, local governments and ethical businesses, and at least some politicians. On the 23rd of October, the Green MPs Denise Roach, Gareth and I, with Marion Street, Jacinda Ardern, Andrew Little, Hone Harawira, Carol Beaumont and others, we'll spend a night working alongside the men and women who clean Parliament for just $14.10 an hour. Our Clean Up the House campaign will flush out, that's an unfortunate phrase, will flush out the government and mop up some of the shameful inequality that is right under our noses every day. Paying a living wage is incompatible with contracting out services to giant overseas-owned service providers, then the Green Party is very clear about which option is best for New Zealand. I do just want to, for a moment, raise an issue. Having commented on David Cunliffe's commitment to living wage yesterday, we are so pleased that the Labour Party has made such a strong commitment to a living wage and to a living wage for the core public service. Make no mistake. But we are also committed to making sure that those people who led the campaign for a living wage, that those who have put themselves in the forefront of the political war over decent wages, that those who have taken the greatest risk in this campaign, and those who need the living wage the most are the first off the block. They are our first priority. Those cleaners, those workers. So make no mistake, the living wage will be on the agenda of a progressive government next year for the lowest paid contractors like parliamentary cleaners, for all of those in the core parliamentary service. That is a promise. And with the EPMU and the other political parties, we have developed a blueprint to resurrect manufacturing in New Zealand. The highly successful cross-party parliamentary inquiry into manufacturing does offer a roadmap and a set of real action to turn around the loss of over 40,000 jobs in the manufacturing sector under this government. We believe that green, smart manufacturing is the future for New Zealand, and we will implement the recommendations of the manufacturing inquiry when we are in government. These campaigns have all captured the public's imagination and have built real political momentum. They have laid the groundwork for the change that's needed to build a better society where we all have the opportunity to lead good lives and provide a fair future for all of our kids. And a government, that is what we plan to deliver. But in order to do that, we must fight the drivers of inequality. Wage inequality is a very significant factor in New Zealand's bigger crisis of inequality. And yes, there is a proper concern about productivity too. But from 1990 to 2012, labour productivity increased by 45%, while the average wage only rose by 19%. So the average worker produced 45% more value in their working time, but only saw a pay rise of 19%. That's not okay. Fundamental to the fight against inequality in New Zealand will be tools to raise wages for the lowest paid. The living wage is one tool that the government can put into place as an employer and as a procurer of government services. But the government is also a regulator and also a lawmaker. So we, the Greens, remain committed to an immediate increase in the minimum wage to $15 an hour and to an increase in the minimum wage so that it is set at 2/3 of the average wage, or, incidentally, $18.35 in today's terms, which would match the living wage. It is right that in the first instance the government leads on that, and we will. Inequality is not gender neutral, and neither is the structure of wage determination in New Zealand. We salute Christine Bartlett and the Service and Food Workers Union, Ngā Rangitoto, for their success in dragging our 1972 equal pay law into the new millennium. Now, I was two in 1972. Lots of you here who weren't born then. It's appalling that it's taken this long. Yeah. There is no doubt in my mind that following the Employment Court's first ruling, it will be shown that aged care workers have been subsidising our healthcare system with their discriminatory low wages. We want to make it easier for women to prove if there is pay inequality in the future. So Green MP Jan Logie has a members' bill in the ballot to modernise the Equal Pay Act to make pay rates more transparent in order to determine if there is gender inequality in the workplace. Given that over 50% of the Green MPs in our caucus are women, this is a matter that our caucus takes very seriously. We know where we stand on pay equity. Unions are fighting campaigns and using our courtrooms to champion equality and to challenge inequality. You're also leading the policy debate on the collective bargaining and other mechanisms of the law must include to make it possible to tackle low pay and low bargaining across many of New Zealand's industries. Because we now know, thanks to you and the work you do, the full cost of insecure work. The report that was released yesterday is a wake-up call, and it highlights the incredibly vulnerable and disadvantaged position of hundreds of thousands of workers that they find themselves in. The numbers are astounding. And when you look at the industries, cleaners, care workers, retail, fast food outlets, forestry workers, meat workers, bankers, people in the banking sector, bank workers, teachers, You know, the list goes on and on. And you realise that pretty much we're saying, you're saying, that workers in practically every industry in this country suffer from insecure work. Now, that is an uncaring and weak foundation for our economy, for our community, and for the families who are affected. We reject such an inequitable and unfair labour environment, and we will work with you to change it. The fact is that every serious contest against inequality in the labour market has required at least one of two things, and very often both. The first is a very high level of unionisation and organisation. The second is public policy and legislation that is purposely built to deliver fairness. Primary school teachers and public sector nurses are among those who have been able to defeat historic pay disadvantages through unionisation and organisation. But what about the workers in the orchards and the packing houses, the small retail and the manufacturing, the rest homes and on the building sites? For those workers who do not have the advantage of high levels of unionisation, professional qualifications, or big workplaces, the barriers to collective bargaining are too high for them. And of course, they have to wait states to prove it. I want to acknowledge the significant work that the CTU has done to develop an alternative framework for collective bargaining, including a modernised system of awards or industry standards. We endorse the principles underlying those proposals. Some of them, of course, are identified in the Insecure Work Report, and we will be considering them in detail as we review our own industrial relations policy. Denise, I think, talked about this with you yesterday. We can and will tackle inequality with living wages, pay equity, and a collective bargaining and wage-setting framework that protects insecure workers and includes those workers in small and remote workplaces. We can and must also tackle inequality in education and in health. Housing policy has a very significant impact on equality. It's the Public Health Association's number one priority. The government's housing policies are forcing wealth to the top while shutting out those at the very bottom. Without a capital gains tax on property other than the family home, as an example, John Key will pay no tax if he sells his beach house at Omaha. Meanwhile, Jane Ikiriri, who cleans his toilet at Parliament, will pay tax on every single dollar that she earns. It is not fair, and we're going to change that as well. But with house prices rocketing up under this government, working people on low and medium incomes are being priced out of owning their own home. Finding an affordable home and raising the deposit is becoming a pipe dream for too many New Zealanders. It is for low-income New Zealanders that the Green Party developed our Home for Life rent-to-own scheme that I announced earlier in the year. It's very simple. The government uses its low cost of borrowing to build modern, affordable, accessible housing. You and your family can move in and pay a fair rent that covers the cost of the government's borrowing purchases in the home. There is no deposit needed. There is no mortgage in this scheme. There is no debt. In our modelling, a family paying $300 a week in rent, rising at the rate of inflation, would own their own home in 25 years. Just like the rest of us have been able to do, just like our parents could do under government schemes. It's policies like Home for Life, our nurses in schools package, and our plans to get manufacturing firing again, that in conjunction with better wages and stronger unions will make a real difference to New Zealand families. Keep an eye out too for our education announcement coming in just a few weeks. I want to come back to the statement that I made at the beginning of this speech, that as we head towards election 2014, there is a real tangible, touchable momentum and a desire for a change in government, for a better government, a good government. It was a bad government that changed employment laws for Warner Brothers in 2010. It's a bad government that banned protests against dangerous deep-sea oil drilling rigs, legislated over the rights of parents of disabled children to be paid for their work, and abolished democracy in Canterbury to push through environmentally damaging irrigation schemes. That same bad government is driving a bus through our gambling laws to give Sky City, in effect, a whole brand new casino in exchange for a convention centre. Lucky them. It's also a bad government who's leading the charge for a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement that is designed to protect the interests of overseas corporates at the expense of our national democracy. The tobacco industry, deep-sea oil drillers, casinos, drug companies, not everyday New Zealanders. They are the winners under this government and their crony capitalism and their bad trade deals. We know where we stand on the TPPA. And right now, that bad government is selling another community asset, Meridian Energy, at the very time that we are preparing to vote on that sale in a referendum that we, with you, have succeeded in forcing. So, well done, you. We know, you know, Grey Power knows, Greenpeace knows, student associations know, and every opposition party in Parliament knows where we stand on asset sales. Despite John Key's bravado, a decent turnout in this referendum and an overwhelming no vote is the last thing that his government wants to finish this year with. The postal vote will take place from the 22nd of November to 13 December, and imagine if every unionised worker and the voters in their household voted no on that referendum. It would easily outnumber the million votes that the National Party got in 2011, votes which the government is claiming as a mandate. So this is our chance to prove once and for all that this government does not have, and no government will ever have, a mandate from New Zealanders to sell our assets, not to overseas interests and not to a handful of local wealthy investors either. Unions. Oh, thank you. Unions can make a massive difference to the outcome of this referendum by making sure that members and their workmates are on the roll and getting them to bring their votes into work, you know, for collection and for posting. And the Green Party will be launching our No Vote campaign this weekend. We will work very hard to win this referendum because together we can save our assets. Unions make a massive difference to the outcome of this referendum. Oh, actually, there's a repeat, excuse me. The 2014 election will be nothing less than a contest of values. In Auckland, it will be a contest between literally the casino economy and a Sky City-led growth strategy, or a city that's built on education, on innovation, and smart green transportation. The relationship between its industrial heart and its beautiful and productive hinterland. In Christchurch, we will pitch our vision for an accessible green rebuild and the restoration of local against the Key government any day. In the regions, we must win the battle for the land and the resources that underpin our real wealth as a people, and make good green jobs out of them. To this end, we have offered to work closely with the CTU leadership on new frameworks to support workers between jobs and in changing industries. The volatile mix of rapidly deteriorating climate and a smaller, more connected modern world means that the secure jobs of today could well be vulnerable jobs tomorrow. And a good government plans for workers in a climate change world. Here in Wellington, we must work with the public service to unlock the talent and the creativity that a progressive movement, a progressive government, will draw on. And in this contest, we are going to see the right fighting hard and dirty against us. Right now, the polls are pointing to the potential for a government that can bring together the major progressive political movements in this country as a very good government. So let's work together in 2014 to first fight and then win an election campaign to make Aotearoa smarter, greener and more compassionate. Let's use the next 2 months to show that we have got what it takes to win, by securing a huge no vote in the asset sales referendum. That will be the best end to 2013. And then, my friends, we'll all take it from there. Kia ora koutou katoa. So the restoration of the local and local government, that to remove from the law and from the policy all of those restrictions that have prevented people from engaging in local government as a true part of local democracy. And we see it being played out in Canterbury in particular, but we're seeing it elsewhere as well. The Housing Accord Bill is another example. Actually, at the end of the day, government can come along to a council and say, this area of land, we will decide the housing policy here, we will make the regulations, we will make the decisions. And if the council doesn't agree or doesn't like it, there's nothing they can do about it. So there's been lots of little examples like that. In terms of the workforce, you know, as part of the government's attack on local government, they have undermined the value of local government workforce. There's been lots of attacks on planners, for example, particularly around housing, around water. There's been a kind of undermining of confidence in local government employees in a whole range of areas through their attacks on local government in general. And we can fix that by, one, restoring genuine local democracy, and two, improving the conditions and supporting those campaigns. So, yeah, kia ora. That last part of your question, sorry, I have to come and talk to you about that in detail. In terms of the general issues around Christchurch, we are launching our kind of rebuild plan, if you like, as part of the by-election that's happening in Christchurch at the moment. So you'll see more detail from there. But we have been long advocates for compact, for urban design, for public transport, for homes and jobs and public transport in the places where people live and work. And sprawl is the complete antithesis of that. It also contributes to significant inequality. It's all well and good to build expensive houses out on the very fringes, but families cannot afford, one, they can't afford to buy them, and two, they can't afford to access them because of the transport costs and all of those things. We need to actually do planning that's around how families actually operate in their communities every day and provide for those services every day. So and just in terms of the sprawl question, we've always been opposed to that for that reason. Plus there are real issues around productive land and how we have to maintain the protection of productive land, which is an issue for me living in Dunedin as well. So, yeah, kia ora.
Thank you. We'll just take one more question from Kevin up there.
Branch of the tramway street. I've got a question for the local level. What's the government's position with regard to the retention of the electric trolley bus system in Wellington as opposed to light rail?
Western Keysley, when you need it. Look, we fought extremely hard to keep the trolley bus system in the city, and we won that fight along with others, and we'll continue that. The light rail is a whole other issue, but we, you know, I can't really comment on that, I don't think. But, yeah, it's a tricky one, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Richard.